Independent Radio. I'm Carol Olson.
And I'm Chelsea Higgs Wise,
your host.
And today I'm launching my new co-host, Chelsea Higgs Wise. So welcome. Thanks for joining me, Chelsea, and becoming a regular on Women and Politics.
Yes. Thank you, Carol. I'm so excited to be here.
All right. And for our January show, we have the women from Women Matter, Eileen Davis, Katie Hornug, and Candy Graham. Thanks so much for joining us today in the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you started womenmatter.org, and then we'll get into the current stuff happening.
We actually started with a rally that was in response to the silent protest. Remember the famous or infamous transvaginal ultrasound bill? Mm-hmm. And we decided what we really needed to forge ahead with was the Equal Rights Amendment. We had all been working on it back in the 70s when it was first passed in Congress and thought for sure, you know, we'd have it ratified in no time, but realized we were still three states short and it was time to get going, especially in Virginia.
Yeah, what had happened with me is I had moved from a ratified state and I was here a few years before I realized that Virginia was actually one of the unratified states, and I saw myself as being positioned physically to actually get it done. And I thought that I was just going to go to the General Assembly and say, hey, you know what? You never did this. And they were going to go, oh, yeah, let's do it. And that's my naivete. I thought that that was just a matter of bringing this thing that I just kind of realized, and did they realize? And my biggest mistake was the thinking it was going to be like, oh, yeah, you're right, let's do this, because that didn't happen.
And I got involved more recently than these two lovely ladies who've been carrying the banner for a while. But my daughter and I started tracking the ERA specifically as an issue after actually the arrests on the Capitol steps were a big deal for us, just because we're big First Amendment rights sort of family. Mm-hmm. So we started looking at Equal Rights Amendment, and that just became an issue. We homeschool the girls, and so that became an issue that we wanted to track and get involved on. Mm-hmm. So here we are.
So tell everybody, what exactly is the Equal Rights Amendment?
Equality of rights shall not be denied by the United States or any of its states on account of sex. It's 24 words, and that's it. And it's exactly the same as the 19th Amendment, which is the right to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex. And that's not an accident, because Alice Paul wrote both amendments, and she put the 19th Amendment in 1920. And then 3 years after the 19th Amendment, she said, and she had this plan all along that, you know, like any big project, she wanted to do the big thing first. Enfranchising the vote for women was the big thing. And, you know, like, you have a lot of homework, you do the big term paper first, and then you do the cleanup. So she did that. And then 3 years after the 19th Amendment passed, she thought, okay, well, now we're going to go and codify all of the rights for every citizen. It was targeted specifically for women, because as the cake is baked, women were specifically excluded from the Constitution. When, you know, when the old white men in the early 1700s wrote the Constitution and said all men, they meant white privileged men. That's what they meant. They did not mean women. We have walked it back and put in the 14th Amendment to include men of color, but we never corrected the inclusion or the exclusion of women. And that remains to this day. So that's what it is. Okay. It really is just that.
And you said that you moved here from a state that was ratified.
Yes.
So to you, just as a woman living in the world, how is that different for you living in a state that is not ratified versus living in one?
Well, we're all the same, because all states, it's important to remember that Hawaii ratified the Equal Rights Amendment 42 minutes after it passed Congress in 1972. Hmm. And if I was living in Hawaii, I would be really mad, because Hawaii is still waiting for all of the states to ratify. None of us are ratified constitutionally, because the process calls for Congress to vote on it, and then it goes out to 2/3 of the states. Well, it stopped to 3 states short of ratifying, and now Nevada this year, which we'll go into later, Nevada ratified in March of this year. So now we have 2 states left. That matters not to states like Hawaii. They're still not ratified. Right. Their ratification that they voted on 42 minutes after it was passed in 1972 is still not in place, because they can't push the button until we're all ready.
Okay.
I would also say I grew up in a ratified state in North Dakota, and coming to Virginia had no idea that it wasn't ratified here, and quite frankly hadn't realized it hadn't passed everywhere, because there was such a big push back in the 70s and 80s, and you just thought, okay, well, this is done. And I was a kid at the time. And so now when I look back on it as an adult living here in Virginia, I'm living in an unratified state, and my two Republican grandmothers were both in ratified states. Like, they both, before they passed, had the opportunity to have their states ratify it. They celebrated it. They were both thrilled that this was happening, and they were thrilled about it. And so here I am as a 44-year-old mom of two girls thinking, what is going on that we haven't ratified this here in Virginia? This is insane. Even Texas has ratified.
Okay, Virginia.
What do you think the holdup in Virginia is?
Oh, gosh, you don't have enough time for that. Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of the holdup is what Katie just alluded to. When it passed Congress, you know, people just aren't paying attention. I've even said to the lawyers, you know, the Constitution never finished ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment. And they look at me, they go, no, I remember when that passed. I wear my ERA button everywhere I go, and I have it on my coat. I put it on my pocketbook. And it starts a lot of conversations and checkout lines. And every now and then someone will say to me, oh, ERA, I remember when that passed. No. ERA, is that still around? They've done studies on this, and 97% of Americans think we should have constitutional gender equality. 72% think it's already in place, because people remember when it passed, but they don't realize that the constitutional process, which requires Congress to vote on something, which it did, by the way, with an overwhelming support, there were only 8 dissensions, only 8. The rest of the Congress voted for it.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics with Carol and Chelsea, recorded at WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's Independent Radio. Now, back to our show.
And it was a Republican bill. It was introduced by Republicans. It was introduced by Republicans in the state of Virginia. This is the original bipartisan I Like Puppies bill. So to your question, I honestly don't understand the pushback that we get today, other than the fact that I know what causes it. And part of it is people don't understand that it's still not done. And we spend a tremendous amount of bandwidth making people understand that it's just still not done, which is why what we're doing here today is so incredibly important, because every person we reach is an instant ally, because I cannot even name one person who I tell about this, and they're like, good, I don't want women to have it. Those people exist, but they are in a very strong, and a very small but very loud minority.
Another thing I would add, when we go to the Virginia General Assembly, we have a lot of legislators that insist that the 14th Amendment covers women. That's what I believed before I started learning about it. But it has the Equal Protection Clause in the 14th Amendment has never been used that way by the Supreme Court. In fact, we would not have needed the 19th Amendment to give women the right to vote if the 14th Amendment had included women. And we've even had legislators say that Justice Scalia is wrong when he said that there's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits gender discrimination. Well, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg agrees with Justice Scalia that there's nothing there to prohibit gender discrimination.
If I might take that back a little bit, she referenced, excuse me, Justice Scalia. And Justice Scalia, interesting point of note, was asked in a Hastings School of Law lecture, a little backstory. The reason we have the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and the Lilly Ledbetter Act is what I call a consolation prize. The Lilly Ledbetter Act is only in effect because Lilly Ledbetter originally took her complaint to the Supreme Court and was turned away. She was turned away. Her case to the Supreme Court was not taken, and it was not settled in her favor. And Scalia wrote the opinion telling her, sorry, not going to happen. We're not going to vote for you. And he was asked in a law school class why he had turned her away. And he said, and I quote, "The question is not whether the Constitution requires discrimination based on sex. The question is whether it prohibits it. It doesn't." And he went on to say, with regards to the 14th Amendment and all these other things, nobody ever voted for that. And you just cannot decide to reinterpret it in. In other words, we can't just say the 14th Amendment really kind of sort of includes women. They never voted for that. They didn't intend that when they voted for it. They just didn't. And then he went on to say, indeed, if society has come to a different view, there is a process for that. Seek an amendment. So he's telling us, Justice Scalia, that it's not in the Constitution. We can't just decide we're now going to kind of sort of say it's there. It's not, and it's not there. And if we want to put it there, get an amendment.
And whether you think it's right or wrong, if the Supreme Court refuses to hear the case, it doesn't really matter whether you agree with them or not.
And and to her point, we had it in a Senate. You asked why it hasn't passed. We had a Senate hearing a couple of years ago on this issue, and we basically read this quote to Justice Scalia. And Senator Tom Garrett, now Congressman Tom Garrett, looked at us and sneered and went, "Oh, Scalia's wrong." And I mean, what do you say to that? How do you respond to that? Okay.
Right.
I mean, so that's the kind of opposition we get that really just doesn't make any sense, you
right.
know. And on the other hand, you've got Ginsburg on the other side of the aisle, if you want to think about the SCOTUS of having their own bias, liberal or conservative bias. She said, if I would like my granddaughters, when they pick up the Constitution, that see that men and women are equal as a basic principle of our society, if I could choose an amendment to add to the Constitution, it would be the Equal Rights Amendment. So we've got both sides of the political spectrum saying we need an Equal Rights Amendment.
And I would take that an extra step further. Our State Department required Afghanistan to put gender equality into their Constitution.
Yeah.
So this to me is something that we all like at some point it's a moral imperative and we all understand what's at stake. And the fact that somebody can take civil rights and play political football with it gets
right.
to be very offensive to me. And so I think that that's why there are many, many women right now, especially with the Me Too campaign. This is kind of the next step. Like, it's great to get out on social media and say, yeah, me too, of course. Everybody I know is me too. So that's one step, is to start talking about it, because many women carry many parts of their life silently. And so one step is to talk about it. And the next step is let's get something done, because right. many of my friends have had that same situation. Well, we're now in our 40s. We have girls. Some of my friends have boys. We teach consent. We are doing all these things as parents to take things to the next level. And now we have to be activists as well. We have to step forward and say, enough, this is not a political thing. When people want to call Equal Rights Amendment political, I just kind of start to hit the ceiling, because this is not a political issue. This is a bipartisan moral imperative. And I say this as a fourth generation Republican. I have voted Republican in the past. I would like to get back to voting Republican, but if we're going to have, and in our Senate here in Virginia, it is Republican men that are voting no on this. And so if we're going to, and one Republican woman, I'm
two.
Hopeful that
two.
She will change her mind.
But two women were voting. Two, okay.
two Republican women.
Two
yes.
are voting yes.
Who are voting
and
yes.
And one is voting no.
Yes.
And all the other Republican men, with the exception of one, are also voting no. And so I kind of look at this as I feel like I should be able to be represented by a Republican man in the Virginia Senate. I feel strongly that reasonable minds can disagree on things, but through diversity, we get better opinions. We get better decisions. I would like to trust that those men that might not be my personal first choice every time would be able to really represent me, my daughters, my husband.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics with Carol and Chelsea, recorded at WRIR LP 97.3 FM.
But when we start to see this being a political and politicized issue, and this is just, to me, a more moral imperative, civil rights, I mean, gender equality, if we're going to ask Afghanistan to step up in their culture, and I understand I have it far better here in America as a working, you know, woman in the corporate world than perhaps somebody in Afghanistan. But we're laying that groundwork for them to say, here it is in your constitution, let's get a culture shift. Well, if you look at the Me Too movement, we need a culture shift here as well.
Mm-hmm.
We need it to start at the top. It can start at the top from a constitutional amendment. We also need the groundswell of women not putting up with the garbage anymore. And we need our girls. We're teaching our girls, it's not your job to make somebody else happy, consent all the way. We're teaching our kids these wonderful things, but we need all of the laws and the policies and everything else to back that up.
You talked about a shift in really moving forward. So you all as a movement, as organizers, what kind of shift are you all trying to make now with the climate of everything that's going on with, you mentioned Me Too, so that's going on. There's a lot going on with women, and you mentioned diversity too. So this being a woman's issue, we talk about feminism and that intersectionality of that. So is bringing all women on to this been a struggle for you all as well? Or every, how has that come out?
Every Republican woman I reach out to personally is on board. Mm-hmm. I have yet to reach a Republican voter who is not on board with this, which is, I think, again, what kind of ticks me off a little bit with how Republican leadership might want to turn this into a political issue. Because if you go out and you look at your voter base, when we say 70-some percent of people think that we already have this in the Constitution, that's not 70-some percent of Democrats. That's not 70. It's 70% of the population, and I think it's like 76 or something. We think it's there. And when I go to my gymnastics meet for my 10-year-old and I talk to the woman next to me, I don't even need to ask political affiliation. I can talk to anybody about this, man or woman. I have yet to run into anybody who says, yeah, I knew that wasn't done. Every single person is like, what? And then they're very curious about, you know, well, tell us what's going to happen. How do we make this happen? And so we've been reaching out to anybody that's interested. We have a database going. We have people across the entire state that are signing up as interested in tracking this topic. We have a Facebook page, which is VA Ratify ERA. And if you go to the tinyurl.com and put in VA Ratify ERA, you would go to our survey, which doesn't have no as an option. It's pretty much, yes, I live in Virginia and I want to see this, or yes, I live outside of Virginia and I want to see this. If you opt in on the email, it would get you into our database so that we are building a coalition, especially of Virginians, who are going to be constituents that want to reach out to their specific delegate, their specific senator. They want to talk to their neighbors. This is not an issue that we can afford to have ignored anymore.
Okay, so I'm going to let you say that one more time so that everyone can get that and go and say what that the URL and your Facebook are so people can sign up and,
sure,
and click that for us.
So Facebook is VA Ratify ERA. And then similarly, the survey is tinyurl.com/VA Ratify ERA.
And also, Women Matter has an online library. And in women-matter.org, we have graduate students using our webpage as a source. It's all there. Scholarly articles are there. Law school articles are there. News pieces like today, the Christian Science Monitor came out with an article supporting ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment, including in the narrative that the Me Too movement has re-energized, as Katie was tying the dots together, that there were a lot of moving parts here. You asked what about our outreach. The thing that's different now is public awareness. We have identified that public awareness is our big missing piece. Our other big missing piece is public awareness to all communities. We work in conjunction with the NAACP. We work in conjunction with the AAUW, the League of Women Voters. We have Women Lawyers of Virginia. Many of their members are involved with us. As a matter of fact, they're going to have a resolution in January to be part of our, you know, they're going to have a vote on it. We're really building a coalition. My dear friend Andrea, who's high up in the NAACP nationally, who's also works with another group, People Demanding Action, and the Equal Rights Amendment is one of their core issues. And I was talking to her. We have women's wage equality dollars that we give out, which has Alice Paul's picture on the front, and it talks about wage disparity, because the single biggest issue that women face that is easily recognizable to them is a wage disparity. And we talk to them about how 78 cents is what a white woman makes in it to a white man's dollar. And, you know, a woman of color, African-American, is 64 cents. Hispanic is 56 cents. And when I talked to Andrea, she coined the perfect, what I think really sums it up. She said, when you're talking about the Equal Rights Women Amendment and bringing in all diverse groups, she says, it's not a black issue. It's not a white issue. It's a green issue. Mm-hmm. And that's really the message, because for most women, the manifestation of this is very culturally overlaid, like Katie said, about the Me Too and all of the rest of it. But it gets down to the fact that it's the Wild West for us. You know, we don't really know what our rights are. You know, you're harassed at work. You don't really, it's kind of squishy. You don't know what your rights are. You're not making this, you don't have wage equity. You don't really have, and HR is, every business does what they want. There's no guidelines. And usually in the middle of this point of a conversation with somebody who's kind of giving me the side eye, because again, it really is pretty basic.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics with Carol and Chelsea, recorded at WRIR LP 97.3 FM.
But what happens is that it seems so simple. People have this cognitive dissonance that they don't understand why it's passed. So then they want to know, what are you not telling me?
Right.
What's the missing link here?
Right.
It really is this simple, which is, and I share the frustration of not understanding the resistance. But what I will say is there's a couple of things that I've come to understand in spending a lot of time trying and living in this space of why. One is, when you're used to privilege, equality can feel like oppression. And let me say that again. When you used to privilege, equality can feel like oppression. So right away, men get a little squishy because they think, and I've had men say, well, you just want special privileges. No, no, no. Being equal is not a special privilege. I'm just want to stand shoulder to shoulder with you. I don't want to go above you. I just don't want to be below you anymore.
So it sounds like this amendment is the equity for women.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Because it's the missing link.
It's the missing link of that, what that is. And that's the resistance of it, because men are so fragile. And when we start pointing out their privilege of it and what we need to be able to reach those same heights, which is an amendment, because even our own
strict scrutiny under constitutional law. Okay. This is also the time when someone will say to me, well, you know, we don't need that anymore.
Right.
And my point is, first of all, there's no we here, sir. And secondly, when did the Constitution become a relic that's no longer needed? Did I miss the memo?
Right.
This is the same person that will drop the C word, Constitution, every other sentence if you were talking about just about any other issue.
Right. It's the other thing of, racism isn't still around. Like back in, at post-racism days, I'm like, wait, this is post? It's the same thing. And so it's the same type of thing with this level of it.
That query. I've had that said to me too. Well, do you think that an equal rights amendment is going to cure sexism? Like, not any more than the 14th Amendment cured racism.
Right.
No, of course not. But at least we'll have a constitutional principle. At least we have a gold standard. At least we have something to aspire to. The right. Constitution tells us how we're supposed to be behaving with relations to race. The Constitution says nothing about how we're supposed to be behaving related to gender.
And more than that, it would be the underpinning that we need in legal cases.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because even if we have, the Lilly Ledbetter Equal Pay Act, it can be erased pretty quickly and easily in a Congress that makes a different decision, number one. But number two, when you go and you want to interpret it for the rule of law in America, if you don't have something underpinning all of these, basically subsequent legislation, you have to have that underpinning on the Constitution for it to go up to that strict scrutiny on the Supreme Court, for it to be something that cannot be questioned.
What she's saying is gender equality only goes to an intermediate scrutiny of law. It does not go to strict scrutiny, because only principles enshrined in the Constitution are subject to strict scrutiny law.
Those are a lot of words. So I'm gonna try and break it down for people that are in here and listening and don't necessarily know a lot about legislation and are listening because session's about to start.
Right.
They know they want to be active and they want to be involved. And so just understanding, because I think you brought up a good point of I don't understand the point. So we want to get the point very clear, is that powers that be, aka men, are making it harder for women to have a case to prove that they need a higher place at the table. They need more respect. They need that extra dollar. That dollar is the power, right? The green is the power, but the other piece of that power is policy. So with these two pieces, women now have a more of a voice with this. Without this amendment, women are not going to be able to go to court and say it's because I'm a woman and have people hear us the way that we need to.
You can go to court up to a certain level.
Right.
But
okay.
To get up to the Supreme Court with strict scrutiny of your case, mm-hmm. you have to have it be in the Constitution.
What is strict scrutiny?
It's a legal term.
Right.
And it means how high up or how much scrutiny your case can receive.
They can bring in more evidence for the case.
There you go.
Review.
That's what we need. Yeah. Okay. So with this, you can bring in more evidence to say it's because I'm a woman. And that's really what we're coming from, is proving our case. It's because I'm a woman. It's because of what I'm born with. It's because of my population of that. Right.
Example, Duke versus Walmart. Largest gender discrimination case ever sent before the Supreme Court. Now, when the Supreme Court thinks about a case, the first thing they have to do, because they get hundreds of cases sent to them a year that they just say, now we're not going to take it. One of the criteria is this, what is the constitutional principle that's been violated?
Right.
Well, gender equality is not a constitutional principle. So if you're breaking a constitutional principle, then you are subject to the strict scrutiny of the constitutional law. If it's not a constitutional law, you don't have strict scrutiny law redress.
So stop that right there. So without this amendment, we cannot say that someone is going against the Constitution because of the way they're treating us as a woman.
Correct. And that's why Lilly Ledbetter was right. turned away.
Right.
And that's why Scalia said I was under no constitutional right. requirement to vote for her because the Constitution does not require to vote in her favor because of gender discrimination. Now, taking it one step further, Betty Duke, who happened to be an African-American woman, brought her gender discrimination case, Duke versus Walmart, largest gender discrimination case ever filed. And that's frankly the only reason they took it was because of the size and scope of the amount of people. There were almost 2,000 women involved. But these were women of all ethnic background, brown, black, white, all ages. And they basically, I'm pretty close, but I'm not positive of the numbers. It was like an 87% of their entry-level employees were women. And only 3% of their employees ever got above entry-level hire. So there was a huge disparity between people getting to become assistant managers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Betty Dukes had a case where she had brought people in, trained them, and they quickly jumped past her, and they were all male. And she started a class action, and close to 2,000 women jumped on that class action. Now, she was turned away at the Supreme Court. That Duke versus Walmart failed in the Supreme Court. And the interesting thing is if Betty Duke had filed this case based on her race, she would have won.
She would have won, right.
But because she was a woman, she didn't, the same constitutional scrutiny for her redress just wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Our college students, when we go and try to inform them and bring them into the process, are just absolutely shocked to find out that when they graduate, they face an average 10% discount in their earning potential than their male colleagues. And they didn't get a discount on their tuition. Mm-hmm. The disparity gets greater with graduate degrees and the older people get and have more experience. There's more and more disparity. To paraphrase one of the students, she said she was freaking pissed when she found
out
about it.
She had air quotes with that freaking.
Yes.
This ends the first part of our interview. Tune in next week for part two.
You've been listening to Women in Politics with Chelsea Higgs Wise and Carol Olson, recorded here in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM. To hear the full show and past shows, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog and follow us on Twitter and Facebook at womenpoliticsva. To support independent radio, to learn.